I just love the idea of being like a sort of bridge or the gap between opportunity and talent and great work.
Hello, I'm Renee Von Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%'s podcast. We explore roles and opportunities within the creative industries with the aim of improving diversity, in addition to promoting, providing a platform, and shouting about awesome women and those identifying as non-binary. For the final episode of Series 2, we are joined by someone who I am 100% a fangirl of, and literally did a little dance when I learned we would be working together. It is the wonderful Shanice Mears, Head of Talent at the Elephant Room. We are both currently guest lecturers at Kingston University on the Creative and Cultural Industries undergraduate courses. Shanice squeezes this in between her full-time role as Head of Talent at the Elephant Room, which she co-founded with Dan Saxby in 2017. The Elephant Room is an alternative advertising agency which champions creativity and diversity. They literally today, at the time of recording, have just received the news that they have made the shortlist for the Drum Awards for Best Independent Agency of the Year and Best Approach to Diversity and Inclusion. Impressive for a startup with just over 3 years under its belt. Congratulations. Now, when I say Shani squeezes guest lecturing in between her full-time job, I wasn't quite accurate. She squeezes in a lot. She is founder of Girls Let's Talk, which hosts events that help women connect and build relationships. She created this from her experiences with Girls Talk, a brilliant organization that works closely with global businesses to address underrepresentation of women in the workplace. Shani is also one of their London ambassadors. She is also the community manager of London Chapter for She Said So, another incredible organization which brings together a global community of women and gender minorities in the music industry. Shani's dexterity knows no bounds. Winding back to her creative roots, she began dancing from the time she could walk and started teaching others professionally in her teens, before going on to achieving a degree in dance and performance at Coventry University. On graduating, she worked as a freelance choreographer, but also applied to Liberty's Dignify program as a digital marketing trainee. This was followed by stints at Iris and Guap magazine, but more on that later. She has sat on the Race Disparity Advisory Board for 10 Downing Street, was the face of a UK LinkedIn campaign in 2018, is a Management Today's 35 Under 35 Women in Business honoree, and has been a speaker at countless events. Shani, you are the first in real life interview I've been able to do since March, so it is doubly joyous to see and welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you. Oh, that's such a nice intro. I was like, is that really me?
I want to say that I've also left a lot of things out that I want to include. I just thought it's going to turn into like crazy fangirl here.
Oh, that's great. And I always really like when people like round up like my like sort of life. I'm like, oh yeah, I did that. I was like,
a little trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
But to be fair, you're living a lot of that right now.
Yeah, true, true. But it's when you said like the freelance choreography and then like doing dance, I was like, oh yeah. But yeah, no. Yeah, that was super cool, and thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. So I'd love if you could talk about what are the responsibilities of Head of Talent and also what you do in your role.
As Head of Talent and, I suppose, co-founder of the Elephant Room, we're still a really small team, so there's six of us. And Head of Talent, the way how I see it, like, a lot of people sort of assume that I'm, like, just managing talent or just hiring in talent and stuff, but I suppose my day-to-day is all about, like, one, building our talent brand at the agency, so what that looks like for people who not only work with us, but anyone who comes into contact with the Elephant Room on a collaborative basis. So that could be young people, whether that just be through support, could be people who are working on projects, it could be people who are actually like working for us in the Elephant Room. And I see my role as like responsible for understanding what that talent wants, how we look after that talent, how we make our agency more accessible to talent for those that don't know us or for those that don't necessarily get to always work with us and stuff. And then collaborating across different ways with like partnerships. So like whether it be like, say, for example, young talent, like through students, so like how we work with universities or different industry bodies, like for example, DNAD, for anyone who's in like obviously advertising and stuff. And then equally looking at ways in which we can, say, build out our proposition over time for talent. So obviously as an agency, like I said, we're very small, but we have like quite high aspirations. So wanting to sort of build like communities and a global community and stuff like that. So I basically look after that a lot of the time, explore ways in which we can do that. So for example, our creative storytellers brand and building out the guest list network and leading a lot of the projects, like through UAL, we just done a project called The Story of Our Time, and we've done stuff like with like say Creative Conscious Awards, and I've judged that and stuff like that.
So super nurturing, actually, from everything you've just said. It's not just like this hands off, here's our talent, and just kind of making sure that they're doing what they need to do and got what they need. It's kind of really growing people.
Yeah, definitely. I think nurturing's a really good word, actually, because I've always been someone who doesn't want just one job. And I think a lot of people are like that now. Like, they want to be able to have a portfolio of careers, and they want to be able to be adaptable and transition and stuff. And I think companies who rely on just being like a good brand and hoping that people want to work for them for 10 plus years, I think it's not very future proof. And I think that with the Elephant Room, we want to be a desired, obviously, agency to work for. We do. But equally, we also know that we probably won't be someone's first choice for the next 10, 15 years, but we still want to be able to build a relationship with that person. So it's kind of like looking at what that looks like and what support looks like. So whether it be through a program or whether it be through our network, we still want to be able to build relationships with people beyond them, like giving them a full-time job. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that. So it really is the whole thing about, especially creative careers, they aren't like something that's just linear. Like you do one thing, you go to the next. You're normally juggling lots of things, and that's kind of what creative people do. So I love that you've got this vision as well of like investing in people now that might come back in 10 or 15 years. Like, I love that.
Yeah, so awesome.
It's not on the now, which is so much about a lot of established agencies,
yeah,
not necessarily even big agencies.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, yeah, it's just important, really. I just think we can't expect people to say just come to us just because, or think that we can have one way of doing things. It has to be multiple streams of how we engage, and ultimately our talent brand is a big part of that. And remaining culturally relevant is also important. So a big part of my role is also just understanding what is happening, like what is going on in culture. How do we want to be sort of known to be relevant within culture? Like, what are the things that we care about and stuff like that as well?
I think that's a lovely connection too. I mentioned your creative beginnings in dance. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know kind of how you've tied dance and what you're doing now. What was that journey from choosing to go and study dance and then moving within advertising and marketing?
So random, isn't
it? It's not though, is it?
It's like, at first, like, I love teaching dance above anything. Like, I do love dancing, and I was performing for years, and then I realised actually I really enjoy just teaching and nurturing, kind of what you're saying. I suppose that journey, like when I finished uni, I remember I did my dissertation on the emancipation of the black female body, and I was really immersed in like that research and just understanding what that was, and like bringing in like music and artists and stuff like that. And I remember when I finished it, I didn't get the grade I wanted. And I was just like, I don't want to dance anymore. Like, this is depressing.
Just because of the grade?
Well, yeah, just because of the grade and, like, I think the lack of enthusiasm from my lecturers at the time. And I just didn't feel that empowered, if I'm honest. And then I kind of thought, I remember my mum saying to me, like, oh, but are you proud of the work? And I was like, yeah, I'm really proud of the work. And she was just like, well, then that's kind of all that matters, really, isn't it? Like, as long as you're proud of what you've produced. Then I remember that. And I was like, yeah, like, I don't want to be hung up on, like, grades or one way of doing something or how people perceive things. I want to be able to do lots of different things. So I remember, like, I planned, like, my first event, like, outside of uni. I just left and I'd, like, wanted to bring everything together, like, fashion, music, dance and stuff. And then that's when I initially also started to build my relationship with Liberty. And it was literally just one thing, like, of one conversation where someone was like, I really think you should consider, like, just marketing and, like, advertising as a space, not knowing what that was at the time as well. And then I was just like, yeah, but not really, because I don't really do that. And then I thought, actually, I've got, like, quite a few transferable skills, like, in terms of, like, the organisational skills, understanding people. I already knew how to sort of lead groups in a sense where I was teaching and stuff like that. And then when I got to London, I still actually, for 4.5 months, I was still travelling back every weekend to teach dance.
To Birmingham?
Yeah, to Birmingham. I remember when I joined Iris, we were doing a fruit shoot commercial and they needed to do castings and it was for children. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I teach kids, like, they're in Birmingham, but I teach kids and I have really good relationships with parents. And then I remember just being on the process of that and then, like, two of the kids that I had casted got through and stuff like that. And I was just like, what? Like, oh my gosh, this is why network is so important. And I started to put, like, loads of stuff together. And I think that's when I really started to understand, like, my value in terms of, like, what I've been doing over here and then how I can translate that back in terms of, like, opportunity giving and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of how I've just continued to link the two. Like, I still was teaching dance up until March this year, and that's only because of COVID. Otherwise, I probably would have still been teaching, but, you know, schools have stopped and theatres have, like, they closed down for a bit. And a lot of the time it was like, oh, do you know any 11 to 13 year olds that do it? And I'm like, oh yeah, I know this. And I immerse myself in different communities, especially young children. And I think it really does relay back to everything I still do at the Elephant Room in terms of understanding talent or what people want or how to engage with a certain audience and stuff like that. Because I have them, in terms of, like, because I work directly with them, it's easy for me to offer that insight and offer that connectivity. So I think that's how I was mostly, like, linked the two. But yeah, I haven't been dancing for the past 6-7 months, but ultimately that's kind of how I would justify why that works for me.
It is amazing, isn't it? I mean, hindsight is amazing, but, like, when someone suggested to you, I'll go and try, you know, getting into marketing and advertising, you're like, yeah, it's not my bag.
Yeah.
Even though you'd been doing it. Like, I think that's interesting. That's part, I think, of failing of education is not making people aware of what is out there, yeah, you know, like, and how you can connect things.
Yeah, 100%.
And I love that, you know, it's still really present. It's not like you've left dancing. It's still part of your everyday and you rely on it for things now.
Yeah, definitely. And I just love dancing. So I think I might just get back into it for me, because I think I did get also quite lost in teaching and not really doing it for me anymore. And I think I should probably get that back. But ultimately, like, yeah, I just love dancing.
I've mentioned and you've talked about being co-founder of Elephant Room. I would love it if you could talk in more detail about what it is and also how you came to co-found it and why.
The Elephant Room is we're a creative advertising agency, but I think I normally say like we're a creative company and we operate in the advertising world, because I think that by saying advertising agency, sometimes it insinuates that we're limiting ourselves to just advertising, and actually that's not true, because in the early stages of our like journey, we shot a music video and like cool stuff with like Universal and things like that, and I think you don't typically see advertising agencies doing stuff like that, so I think I prefer creative company. but essentially that's what we are, and we talk a lot about representation and audiences being at the heart of our insight and our work, and we also talk a lot about the way in which we work across the board, so within say advertising like that industry, but also embracing the wider creative industries, so being able to facilitate conversations outside of the advertising space as an agency is really important to us. Yes, the work that we create and ultimately the creative work that we create, we want to be able to take brands on a journey where they can become inclusive by design, we say, and like positive for people, positive for the planet, and just like, you know, modern and contemporary brands that are inclusive, essentially. And I think that's really important to us. But then equally, it's also important to us to be able to give back to the talent that we work with and that support us and that collaborate with us, because a lot of the time it can, you know, there's a lot of talk around like young talent being exploited and or like not being paid their worth and stuff like that. And I think as a small company, you can't always pay people, which is just the reality of things. And I think as a company and as a team, we have resources and people within this the organization that can help, so we aim to sort of build an agency that just from the foundation and from the get-go we always offer our resources and I suppose our accessibility to advertising. Myself and Dan are the co-founders. Dan was the former CEO of Iris Worldwide. I was an intern there, which is where we met, and I suppose that just became like a mentorship relationship. A little bit untold and unsaid, really. Like, he didn't really say, oh, I'm your mentor. It wasn't like a proper formal thing, but it was definitely that in terms of the early stages of me starting at Iris and just being curious, and him really like helping me unpack that and really encouraging my potential and me as a person. So I really appreciated that from him as an individual, and also being so senior. It was a little bit like surreal for me at the time. And I think as we've got to sort of build our relationship, he sort of reminded me that like just as much as I'm learning from him, he's learning from me, which I think is what built a great sort of collaboration and like partnership between us. So then when we co-founded that, the Elephant Room did actually initially start off with me and Dan and then three other co-founders. But, you know, just like every business, we have different changes and things happen, so we are now the only two co-founders in the business, but we have six people in the business and five at senior leadership. And essentially like every time I talk about the Elephant Room, right, it's not like it changes, but I feel like it evolves, because we are only 3 years old, and like that's so young in like the startup world and business world. So we're just literally trying to build something that has a lasting legacy, like, and that has purpose at the heart of what we do and great creative work ultimately. But I feel like my role in that is all about, like, I just love the idea of like being like a sort of bridge or the gap between opportunity and talent and great work. And I think brands, particularly right now as well, like with everything that's going on, need that, like, I'd say consultation and those agencies to work with to create great work, because I think the more and more we indulge ourselves with just the state of the world, we want authenticity and transparency from the things that are around us, and I don't think people realize how much they're taking from brands and platforms and organizations as much as they realize. So we just want to be on the good side of history, basically. And that's kind of it, really. And like Dan was someone who was just always a curious leader, I would say, in Iris. Really invested in like the things that I was doing. So like
Girls Talk London, for example, he would ask about, like, what is that? Like, what do you do? And GWAP as well, he wanted to meet them and understand a bit more about what is this video magazine. And, like, he was just very curious. And at first, I didn't understand it because I was just like, why do you even care? Like, I don't get it. Like, but actually, it was just him trying to understand culture and what is relevant. And that takes me back to sort of like, how do you stay culturally relevant and stuff like that. And I also just appreciated his curiosity. So we would have interesting conversations and we would like talk about different things. He would talk about his sometimes challenges as a leader. So like hiring in, let's say, diverse talent and stuff like that. And we'll talk about it. And I just kind of felt like, oh yeah, this is great. And then one day we just had a conversation and then he was just like, I just think we should start a business. And I was like, okay. Didn't really believe him, really, to be honest. And then he was like, I'm being serious. And then he was being serious. So then we did. And then that's kind of where it's gone to, really.
I love that. I also love when you do an impersonation of Dan. No one can see it but me. And it's gold. Your whole body, the way it moves.
Oh, that's funny. Don't tell him that.
He'll listen to this
and he'll be like, oh, God.
Yeah. Your logic around thinking about the long game, but also the now and how the two are connected and being on the right side of history, because we are in a moment of change and we are going to see lots of things land, especially post-COVID. I mean, when is that going to be? I don't know. But, you know, we're still on this bumpy ride for at least another 6 months to a year. And I think there is something in that. And, you know, you are just over 3 years old and you're a teeny company and you're already doing incredible things and you are a voice in the industry. You know, I didn't mention an amazing article you wrote for Campaign. You know, I've seen you speak on panels. I just love that you channel what you know and what you believe into connecting. I love that term, being a bridge. That's so awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, like, I do appreciate all the support that is around the values that we're building and, like, that I have and stuff, because sometimes it's not always like that and you don't always get people who agree with what you're saying or who sort of even think that that's a thing. And I think actually it's been quite a positive journey for us in terms of what we're trying to champion and how we're trying to build that out. I think a lot of people look at mine and Dan's partnership as a really interesting partnership, which I also think it is, but I think it's for the better, so it's great. Yeah.
So part of the Elephant Room is the creative storytellers, which I really like. But I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about it and how people can get involved.
It was just created initially an in real life event for people to feel empowered, equipped, inspired by friends of the Elephant Room, so industry experts that we know and that are also willing to share their expertise based on a topic or a theme that we set and basically facilitate that conversation. So our last one was during lockdown, so it was online, and that was all about creative entrepreneurialism under lockdown. And we spoke to like three great young entrepreneurs and freelancers who have just been able to adapt during lockdown and during this crazy time. Previously to that, we've done stuff at like Cobalt, which we spoke about music as protest, and Twitter. We've done Hidden Careers and the Power of Networking, and we've been able to get really great places to host it at. And I think the idea of creative storytellers is really, it's about empowerment for me. And I think to hear creative stories through first-hand experiences, like, and relatable figures, I think that's really important. The most recent thing we've done is our one-month mentors, which is happening currently. And that is just basically a mentoring program for the next month for 30 individuals, 15 mentees and 15 mentors, which is sort of themed around Black History Month. So it's young Black creators being partnered with 15 senior leaders in the industry. And to be honest, you can just get involved by contacting me. Yeah, just contact me. Obviously, our program right now is happening, so that's kind of what we're concentrating on. But we will be looking at doing our next Creative Storytellers. Hopefully we'll be able to do one before the end of the year, which will probably be virtual again.
So I'll put all those details in the show notes of how to contact you and links to Creative Storytellers. Yeah. Awesome. As I mentioned, not only do you teach, you're co-founder of Head of Talent for the Elephant Room, you also founded Girls Let's Talk in connection with Girls Talk. I'm wondering if you can talk about Girls Let's Talk and who it's for and, you know, why you decided to do it.
When I was in Birmingham, literally just before I moved to London, actually, I became an ambassador for Girls Talk London. And the reason why I became an ambassador is because I felt like there wasn't, well, me personally anyway, there wasn't enough females like in Birmingham at the time trying to connect with other females outside of Birmingham. So I wanted to really be able to like build my network outside of the city. That was my initial sort of thought. Then I got a job in London, ironically. And then it was hard for me to basically meet other like-minded women like myself who were sort of on their first steps to like into their career, quite ambitious. And I knew that they were around. I just didn't know where to find them. So joining Girls Talk London like sort of really helped me with like that sort of personal professional development. And Girls Talk London were doing all these great things that I was getting involved with, but then I kind of wanted to be able to sort of spread the message, I suppose. And ages ago, another thing that I did, I'd done a thing called the O2 Think Big grant funding, and I got it, and I became a Think Big alumni, which meant that I had access to their space in Hoxton. So I just literally was like, to Vanessa at the time, she's the founder of Girls Talk London, I was like, do you think I can put on an event and create a sub-brand called Girls Let's Talk? And yeah, would you support me? She was just like, yeah, like, what do you need me to do? I said, to be honest, not much. I just need you to put it into the community because I don't have a network right now. And she was just like, okay, then, like, yeah, let's do that. And I was, like, so grateful because I was just like, yes, like, someone that will really support, like, me doing something under that. After I had asked Vanessa, I had asked O2 to use their space, literally told about five of my friends, like, my girlfriends, and told them to bring a friend. So it was, like, 10 of us. And then a friend of mine who's an amazing poet, called Sophia Thakur, she came and done some poetry and we just spoke, and I was like, I want to do this more, and I want it to be for women who feel like they don't want to be a part of a clique, or it's not necessarily about making this big girl gang. It's just about really finding a tribe that thinks like you and that will allow you to be yourself, no judgment. You can connect with each other, network, educate each other, and share experiences, build, and there's no pressure to sort of like, and not that there's anything wrong with it, because I see a lot of them, but I see a lot of, like, you know, like women's squad stuff, and like, but sometimes to me it does feel like very cliquey, or like if you're not one of them over here, you can't be one of them over there. And I didn't want it to be like that. I just wanted it to be girls talking, like, and that's it. And if you want to sit with us, you can, but don't feel pressure to as well, kind of thing. That's kind of it, really. And because I was literally doing it on a whim, I didn't really know like the direction I wanted it to go in. I didn't really know like how I wanted to brand it. It didn't even have a logo for the first 3 years. Like, I just wanted to run a regular event, and I did that successfully, and I had great people talk on the panel. I think it was during lockdown, I said to myself, I'm not really doing the community a service now, because there's a community of girls that know about the brand, but they don't have a hub. So started an Instagram, built a team. And since we've done like, I think over for the past 6 months, we've done like a 7-week online seminar in partnership with Young Gifted Initiative, which is great because we had girls from California, New York, San Francisco, like, that's been great. And we've done like a photo shoot, and we just have a proper identity now. And it's great because not that we didn't exist before, because we definitely did, but you just didn't really see us, like it wasn't present, whereas now we're present and like you can see all the stuff that we're doing, and it's been great. And I think that's kind of what it's for now. It's just for people to feel like positive and inspired, but there's no pressure to be like this girl gang. It's just for girls who want to chat, or anyone who identifies as female anyway. So yeah, that's kind of us.
I kind of love just kind of what you've been talking about with the Elephant Room and also with Girls Let's Talk. It's kind of like you're like, I'm going to do something, can you do it? And then it just evolves into these amazing things with you like never really thinking I'm going to drive this. Like I kind of love that you just explore what it can be without like some huge amount of pressure on it.
Yeah, but I think that's it. Like I'm the kind of person, like I'm very impulsive and like I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but it does allow me to sort of, I hear the term a lot, but it's like fail quickly, but I don't really ever look at it as failing. For me, it's more just like learning.
Mm.
And it's kind of like the worst that could happen, it just doesn't work out. Like that's the absolute worst. But then if it does, then that's great, isn't it? So you kind of have to go with one or the other. And for me, it was kind of like, I love being able to sort of bring something from A to B. Like I love seeing that, like that evolving and like that growth. I love that. And I hate stress. Like I can't deal with it. So although I do want to see like that evolving and that growth, I never ever pressure myself to be this way or that way. I just sort of go with that trust in the process kind of thing. And again, I don't know if that's a good or not, but that's kind of it. Like I do things quite impulsively and I do have ideas and stuff, but ultimately I don't put pressure on myself for it to be absolutely successful. I just think if it is, then that's amazing. But if it's not, I have to be okay with that as well.
I think that's great advice for life though. But I think I will say, like when you say like you're impulsive and you like to try lots of things, and but you do then also like to see things go from A to B, like because you don't just start things and don't see them through. I guess you like trying things and seeing out, you know, maybe adapting or changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that is key though, isn't it? It's not just starting a million things and never finishing them.
Not that. Like it's definitely like it's things that I truly care about as well. Like I never really do things half-heartedly because I probably just shouldn't have done it in the first place if it's a half-hearted thing.
Yeah.
But things that I really care about, I try and definitely like see that through and see how that can be adaptable or what can be different and stuff like that. And I think that's also maybe why it works as well, because the pressure isn't there, but I really, really care about it. So naturally, I'm going to work hard at it, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
It makes total sense with everything's on your plate when you're like, I don't like stress, but then I can like list about a million things that you're involved with.
I don't know how that happens, but it is, but I do, I can't, oh my gosh, no, yeah, stress, it stresses me out. I like peace as well, so like, I love that.
So when I was like putting together these questions and putting together your intro, I couldn't stop laughing. It was like just another thing to add. So I did mention She Said So.
Yeah.
And I really, really love what they do. And I hadn't heard of them before, I have to be honest. But I loved this quote that they had on their website was to connect and empower underrepresented communities towards a more equitable music industry for all, one woman or gender minority at a time. Like, mm-hmm. That's so awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, She Said So are great. Prior to, like, sort of just finding myself in advertising, like, I love music. And I really thought that if dance didn't work out, music is where I'd be. And that's kind of how I know She Said So, because I literally joined every music group I could find when I was in Birmingham. And I'd come up for, like different events and stuff, and I met a great girl who's my friend now called Georgia, and she was one of the London directors for She Said So. And I just thought it was such an incredible space, like literally about 3,000, 4,000 women in a chain of like a form of emails, just sharing stuff and talking about their experiences and debating. And I found it so inspiring, and I felt like I need to be a part of this, like, officially. And it took me about 4 years, because essentially I don't really work in music, but because of Guap, and I also, it's a very slow road, but I also, like, I'm on the journey of managing an artist, I felt like I really want to immerse myself in that space. And I'm really passionate about, obviously, young people and stuff. And they've done a call out for community managers to join their London chapter. And basically, I'm a part of the youth chapter. And it's been great, actually, because I joined last August, and we've done, like, a collaboration with Urban Development that I sort of co-produced a panel. Then we've done Music, Style and Tech, which was my event that I held at Mixcloud, and got someone from fashion, someone, like, talking about the future of generation, and been able to implement that. And I'm doing a little small project at the moment that I just thought, I had an idea, let me just go with it, like. And she said to really allow me to do that in that space, and like they really appreciate like my, I suppose, my expertise in that sense, even though I'm not in music. So yeah, she said to are great, and like everyone should check them out because they're doing some really amazing work.
Yeah, and their website's brilliant. When I started exploring it, you know, for someone who didn't know about it. So, yeah. Obviously, you're doing a lot of outreach there as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't like stress, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to go back to your job as head of talent. Mm-hmm. What skills would you say are needed for the role? So if someone's thinking about, I really loving the sound of this, or is actually aspiring to work with talent, what skills do they need?
Okay, I'd start off with character. The type of character that you'll be, or the type of person I think you'll be, is someone who's curious. You'll be passionate about, like, sort of grassroots initiatives and built partnership building. You'll be compassionate and approachable. You'll be willing to lead in terms of, like, other people if, like, they don't know something or curious about something. And then skills, I'd say, like, you'd be quite an organised person. You'd have great listening and communication skills. You'd be quite an adaptable person in terms of who you're speaking to and the communities you're speaking to and how you're speaking to them. You'd be quite inquisitive in terms of, like, understanding talent, in terms of spotting talent, and quite attention to detail in that sense, like how to match opportunities. I think that you'll also be a very, very well-connected person. I didn't really realise it really until, I say, last year, but a big part of what I do is who I'm around and who I know. But that's not because, oh, I'm just know all these people. I've genuinely immersed myself in so many different communities and avenues to learn about those different things, to be able to bring that back to my role to then do the job. So you'll be someone who is constantly building your network, and that could be from junior entry to senior levels of people. You'll be someone who is okay with late nights. I'd say, like, I mean, obviously I did dance at uni, so I don't think your degree has anything necessarily to do with it, but you will be a creative type of person. So people who do stuff like, you know, producing and that kind of skill set, I think would do well in that space as well. But then equally, I think that if you're someone that just enjoys being creative, bringing ideas to life and stuff, then equally that you could also fit into that space.
Something that you've mentioned quite a lot, and you've also just mentioned it then, is networking. And I think when I was younger, I really wasn't aware of the power of the network. And like I tell my students all the time, like, network, get to know people, even if it's not your thing. And I think, like, you did that. You did that from a really young age. You were like, I want to find out what's going on in London. And, you know, and I want to also, you know, the Birmingham crew to, like, be connected and all that kind of stuff. So it's funny how that really is a massive part of your role now.
Yeah. Like, obviously, I've only been here 4.5 years, which actually isn't that long of a time. But I genuinely have been coming to London since I was about 17, 18, and meeting people and just, like, interested in things. So, like, and even, like, for example, like, I use music as an example. Like, there's artists I've been following for, like, 5 years, and they're probably just getting big now. And people were like, how do you know? And I'm like, I literally know their catalogue. Like, I'm like, do you know what I mean? And I've always been like that. So I'm the kind of person, and this is just me, so you don't have to be this kind of person, but this is just me. Like, I'll work the door at a concert just to see who's on the guest list. I'll be backstage and I'm happy to just usher people through if I can see who's coming in and out. Like, I feel like that's, for me, that's like working smart in a way, because you're getting access to things and people that you otherwise probably wouldn't be able to get, and you don't have to pay for that because you're still working. So I'm still getting paid for something that I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? And for me, I prefer to be that way. Like, I'd much rather work the door at a concert that I love than attend the concert that I love and just enjoy it, but then I can enjoy it and still network.
I love that you're always hustling. You're always like, how?
That's me, like, how can I make this work for me and for work? And that's kind of how I am. And also as well, like, it is 100% about networking. It absolutely is. But also as well, like, it's about also being a trusted person. I think I've built like some really great relationships within the industry amongst people and organizations, and they look at me, I think, or believe anyway, that I, as a trusted source. And that's just because it's just a nice relationship that we have. Like, we probably haven't even collaborated yet, but we keep each other in the loop. We probably share stuff, and it's just being like a nice person. Like, I think ultimately that's also it as well. Like, people don't want to work with people who are entitled or feel like you should be doing something or constantly taking and never giving. Or, like, I don't really look at life that way. And I think that's also why I have a good network, because people genuinely just, like, enjoy conversation and stuff like that.
I was just going to go fangirl and I just thought, stop it. Embarrassing myself.
<That's> so funny.
What advice would you give someone wanting to work in talent management or, you know, a leadership position? Because you're kind of straddling both at the moment. I'll come on to the co-founder because that's another kind of skill set.
Yeah.
But, you know, like managing talent, talent acquisition, and then also the leadership element of that because you're head of talent.
I think everything is so dependent because everything is dependent on, like, say, industry or level or your autonomy that you actually get to have and things like that. So for people who are trying to obviously get into talent management, firstly, I will always say, like, look at what you are entering. So the industry that you're entering, the type of talent that you'll be managing, and understand that space. So, for example, it could be like, say, music artists, I don't know, or it could be talent as in like influencer talent and that kind of space. Or it could be like, for me, in an agency where I'm looking after talent that is not necessarily famous or anything, but it's just talent as a skill. Yes, all the previous things that I said apply, but you might need to have, say, more, say, discipline, for example, around one than the other because of the, I don't know, the sensitivity that you're operating in them and the people or something like that. I would just advise that, one, patience is probably your friend, because I remember the early stages, even still sometimes now, like working with young people, they genuinely didn't even know how to price themselves. And sometimes it's even just like sitting down with someone and saying like, okay, you're gonna do this job for us, but this is the average rate for this job and your invoice looks like this. Like, sometimes people haven't even had that, so you have to go way back and then take the steps forward. So I think you have to also be willing to, if you want to work in the kind of talent I'm talking about, you have to also be willing to be patient and to be willing to pass on knowledge and to constantly learn. And then I'd say teach. I always say that because I feel like even though, yes, I lecture, but it's a constantly teaching thing that I'm doing, because sometimes, unfortunately, kind of where we were saying about the education failing, like young talent particularly, which is where I operate the most, they don't always know everything, and I have to be okay with that because of the nature of their background or something like that. So I would just advise, if people are working in that space, like, figure out ways in which you can accommodate to that. Just don't be impatient with them or shun them, because, you know, it's all a part of the job. And then equally, I think it's also about, like, when you go back to, say, the leading thing, like, I still even think like I've got so many different like skills, yes, but I think my leadership skills are still yet to be really improved. And I say that is because at the Elephant Room, we have such autonomy and no one's really like, say, managing a big team, for example, or anything like that. And I think I haven't yet had that experience just because of like my unique way into the industry and like now where I am. So I'd say that like, because of that, I also find myself constantly trying to build on my leadership skills elsewhere and like say manage my team, for example, like Girls Let's Talk or building events outside of Elephant Room so that I bring that skill back so that I've already kind of got things wrong over there. So it's low risk over here. And I think as a leader, you have to also be willing to do like that extra work a bit, I think. And I think that empathy and compassion is very important because you'll always come up against people with circumstances that are not yours and lived experiences that are not yours. And I think that in this space, again, talking about talent, like I personally think that you cannot, and this is just for the role that I play in the industry and the talent role that I occupy, but you cannot be or care about talent and be passionate about talent, but then not immerse yourself in the cultural conversations about talent. Like, you have to understand the types of talent you're interacting with, what's happening for them, what are their problems, what are their challenges, what's great for them, what's not great. Like, I immerse myself so much in that space because if I'm gonna say hire people from outside of let's say not UK, but London, but I don't know anything about talent outside of London, I don't know what they're coming up against, I don't know the types of salaries they, then I can't really say that I'm the best person to do that because I don't know anything about that. And vice versa. So a lot of the time people talk about, let's say, hiring diverse talent, like learn about diverse talent or talent who have, let's say, the inability to do something because of their, again, circumstances, learn about that. And I think it's important. So I constantly try and immerse myself in those spaces, which I would advise people to also do.
I love that you talk about patience and empathy and compassion, and they're all rolled into advice for the role. Mm-hmm. One thing you didn't say, which I think is evident of you anyway, so I don't think it'll be a surprise, but also generosity. Like, you are super generous, and maybe you wouldn't think of yourself in that way, but the patience you talked about is also being generous, like giving people space and allowing them to be who they are and helping them to the next step.
Yeah. It is generous. But you know what, though? Like,
but not on a pat on the back, I'm so generous. No, but 100%. It's like having generosity of spirit for someone else.
Yeah, I think that's it as well. Because, like, as a character, for like, as in just the type of person that I am, naturally I like giving. Like, I just like helping people because I think I sometimes need help. So who am I to ask for help if I don't want to give help? That's kind of how I just see life. But then equally, I do think that thing about, you know, you said about like compassion, empathy, patience and generosity. Sometimes people think that, like, well, I've had conversations recently that traditionally and in past years, people have said that those are skills that a leader shouldn't have because they need to be like logical and hard-hitting and assertive. And yes, you do need to be those things in terms of like, obviously understanding boundaries, which is what I would say, but you still also need to be those things like generous and compassion. And I'd argue probably those things more because obviously everyone's different, but it's sometimes people aren't generous by spirit. So it's almost like a learning experience for them to go on. And sometimes it's not always necessarily told to them or explicitly said that, no, you should be, which is why I don't think people take that route.
Yeah, and there's a thing called patriarchy that's been around for a while.
I was like trying to be nice around how I'm like articulating. Essentially, like, there is a hierarchy and a patriarchy that exists and a system around us that's been built that we're not taught in certain ways or we just weren't allowed even in the room. So now that we are breaking down those ceilings and those, I suppose, those myths,
yeah,
it's like almost like rewriting how to do things and retelling like that's okay, like this is okay to do it this way.
And taking that space and yeah. Changing it.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
I'm curious to know what's been the biggest challenge you've faced in your career.
It's a very personal one, but I think probably my biggest challenge is like my sacrifice of moving here and being away from like my family, because it seems small sometimes, but actually like sometimes I don't see my mum for months and I'm so close with her. My nephews were also very close, and my sister, my brother, like sometimes like stuff are going on in the family. I don't even know what's happening. I'm like, what's going on? Like, why don't I know about this? Like, and that, oh yeah, sorry. Like, we just thought you were busy. So like they even now make the assumption because I am busy. And like, although yeah, it's true, but it's also kind of sad for me sometimes. And I think it does get me down sometimes because I'm like, oh man, I wish I could just work normal and just have normal time and to spend time. Like, I just want to just do that because I don't want to miss out on important things like that. But ultimately, like, it is a long-term gain. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest challenges I've come up in terms of, like, my personal development, because I genuinely didn't know how to deal with the absence of those, like, my family in my life for a while. And I think then it had a little bit of a toll on, like, my professional development, like, me feeling like I was undeserving of things because I was neglecting other parts of my life, kind of thing. But ultimately, if it's more so like just like career and it's just looking at that, I think I always talk about like my journey of like understanding value. I genuinely did not know I was a valuable person in advertising or in any company because I didn't understand my skill. And I always felt like, for example, I wasn't like a graphic designer or an art director or a copywriter, or I didn't have a clear skill of doing something practically. Mm-hmm. And that's all I would ever really see or hear about. And I was just like, well, I don't do any of those things. So how do I find my place? And then you see all the other jobs available in terms of like, let's say, accounts or finance or PR maybe, and again I was like, that's just not me. Like, I'm just not that one way, I'm just not that person. And I struggled a lot. And then on top of that, I'm black, I'm female, I'm not from London, and I'm also like, but at the time I was like 21, 22, and it was only then I was learning about the disparities that exist within, like, you know, like say the gender pay gap, the BAME pay gap, all those things I was learning about. And I was like, I'm never gonna make it. Like, I was like, what's going on? Like, oh my gosh. Like, and it really took me a while. And I've written an article recently, and there's a bit in it that I say, like, when you are, for me, from my own experience as a black female, and really, really being proud of that now, it's quite liberating because now I don't feel like hindered by anything. I feel like I feel quite proud of that. And at the time when I was sort of just entering the industry and not understanding value, understanding like all the different challenges that people are coming up against because of like, you know, patriarchy and stuff like that, I really struggled like understanding like why in the world would anyone hire me, because like I've just got no chance. Like, I'm literally like that. And then I suppose again I went on that journey of like finding my voice and stuff like that and building that resilience and things like that. But I'd say like those are my biggest challenges, like the whole sacrifice and, you know, just taking those leaps of faith and then having to sort of deal with that absence of, like, you know, the people that I love and stuff, but equally as well, like finding that value and coming up against those sort of, I'd say, like barriers and doors, and not realizing how or why I'm even deserving of certain opportunities, I think.
But what's incredible is you just kept going, even though that uncertainty is there. There was obviously something in you that did feel a value, right?
Yeah, I think it was the many conversations I've had with, like, the one thing that I would say, like, hands down, like, that I'm extremely thankful for is, like, my support system, because I definitely don't think that I'd be able to do everything, maintain my mental health from when I first began in the industry if it wasn't for, like, people like, say, my mum, and when I met Dan and we were building our relationship, and then my friends and my peers that were encouraging me. Like, hands down, if I didn't have that, then I would just be like, yeah, nah, I may as well go home from now. Like, do you know what I mean? But because they're trusted voices to me, I was just like, you know what? Yeah, I shouldn't think like that. Like, I'm my own worst enemy right now. Like, and I was just trying to just tell myself that. And now, like, I practice gratitude all the time, and, you know, and, like, and empowering words and stuff like that. And I feel like it's just, for me, it's an everyday battle, really, to be honest, because sometimes you don't always feel like of value, etc., or whatever, but you've got to tell yourself, like, no, like you're amazing, like, do you know what I mean? Like, what? Like, it is an ongoing thing, but it's a big challenge because it's your own voice. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, how are you telling yourself, like, what? Like, you can't, what? Like, you can't do that. So that's why I think it's so difficult, I think.
Again, I wish people could see you telling yourself off. That's brilliant. I've got a brilliant... Every time I'm feeling a bit shit, I'm just going to replay that moment. That's so great. Okay, so tell me, what do you love about what you do?
Honestly, like, I just love people. I love all types of people, and I love learning about people, and I just think it makes my job even greater when I meet great people. Like, there's no one irrelevant to me to meet. Like, everyone for me is worth knowing in my job, and, like, that's what I love, because it's like I can have a conversation with any and everyone and feel inspired, or they've got an interesting story that I can think about. I think that's incredible. And I also love that, like, I can appreciate the fact that I don't have, like, the average story for, say, a 26-year-old finding themselves in advertising. So I'm also thankful for the fact that I also get to sort of shape what my job looks like and career looks like, and I get to do things around that, and all those things that allow me to have that independence is what I love about my role and my job as well, and the position that I'm in.
So how do you get your inspiration? I mean, I know you're doing lots of things, but what do you do for you to inspire you creatively?
I love partying and raving. And when I say that, I don't mean it as in, like, oh, I just go out and, like, I don't drink. So it's not like I'm, like, getting smashed or anything, but I love the idea of celebration. And for me, every party is like a celebration, because people are, like, happy and they're dancing. Obviously, I love dance. And that for me is a big form of, like, just creative expression. I enjoy, it's random, but I have three nephews and I think they're all incredible. My eldest nephew is 22, my youngest is 14, and my middle nephew is 18. And they're just all the, like, what is it, Gen Zs. And they're just so interesting, and I'm really inspired by them, like, a lot. Like, they talk to me about stuff. They think I'm old, which is wild to me. And, like, they'll show me new stuff and they'll be like, you don't know what that is. And I'm like, no, like, and but I love that, and I think that's great. And I'm also inspired by just a lot of things that I see. Again, like, as someone who didn't necessarily grow up, like, exposed to, like, say, money, or I don't know, like, black women in business and stuff like that, I wasn't exposed to any of that. But when I see, like, say, my peers building, like, say, businesses and things like that, I just think, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like, how incredible. Like, the world's actually changing. Like, what? Like, and then I'm also just inspired by, like, just, like, little things. I think I'll, like, read something on Instagram. Like, I love quotes, and Maya Angelou's like the best person in the world to me, like RIP, but yeah. And I always kind of read. I'm inspired a lot by like the conversations I have with my mom as well. I think she's a very wise woman who embeds that wisdom in me. A lot of the time for me, it's just, yeah, it's just the people I'm around reading and the stuff I like to do.
We might be going into lockdown, we might not be, but you talked about creative storytellers potentially having an event coming up, but I wonder what else you've got coming up in the between now and the end of the year.
Got some collaborations coming up, like I've got a DNAD collaboration coming up, I've been asked to do some judging and some more awards and stuff like that, so that should be cool. I haven't really looked as far as December yet. So I'm just getting over October, November period. I mean, 1 month mentors is currently happening and like it will be finishing the end of the month. So I'm really excited to see like the aftermath of that and how we bring that to life and tell everyone how it went and stuff like that. So I was at GWAP and I left in 2019, but whilst I was at GWAP, I came up with something called The Blacklist, which is about in Black History Month, championing 30 under 30s who are across the board. And we like to think of it as like, not like, oh, like these are the best of the best, but more so just like being able to say like, look at the greatness that is happening within the Black community. And it's not stereotyped, so it's not just sport or just creative, but actually sometimes it's science and sometimes it's like psychological, like therapy and like all those kind of things. And I'm really proud of that. And I go back every year to sort of see that project through. So yeah, that's kind of it. Like a couple of stuff that's like happening and
just a few small things.
Yeah.
Between just, now and December.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But awesome. Yeah, that's kind of it really.
I have so loved talking to you and getting to know you a bit more. And yeah, just talking to you now, it's just like evident like how incredible you are, how supportive. I love that you are generous of spirit and super patient and giving and yeah, total inspiration.
Thank you so much. That's so nice. Thank you.
But before you go, something I ask everyone, two things. Is there a creative role in the industry that you've always been like, what the hell does that do? And then potentially I can get someone on and talk about that. And finally, someone else you would recommend I get in contact to invite on to Greater Than 11% to interview.
I keep saying I love music, but I think I've always been curious about A&R-ing. It's kind of similar, I would say, to my role, but just in music, like spotting talent, nurturing that, developing it, understanding, and then boom, like goes off and does. And I feel like that's what A&Rs do. I don't really know, but I feel like if I wasn't, maybe I'd be an A&R, like, maybe. But I really love the idea of that, like, that patience and that building and growing and stuff like that. And I think that you should get a friend of mine called Olivia Crooks, who is a really great girl who has also had an interesting journey, currently now head of client services at Spotify, but previously at Virtue Agency Advice and Grey London.
Wow, she's great. Awesome, yeah. Oh, well, thank you for that recommend. As I mentioned, this is the end of series two, so we'll have to get her in for series three. Yeah. But thank you so much for today. I've so loved talking to you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too, and shout out you, Renee.
That's a wrap, folks. The end of our second series. We are unsure if we'll be back in podcast form. We're in desperate need of sponsors to continue. But sign up to our newsletter on our website, greaterthan11.com, that's greaterthan11.com, to keep up to date on future plans. Thank you for your gorgeous listening ears and support.